Ladies and gentlemen, prepare yourselves for a shock.
Ready to be challenged? Maybe a little offended, but definitely shocked. This is Shock Therapy Live. Your therapy session with Nate Heitzig. We're not looking for stump the pastor questions, so put down your Devos and open your diaries. Really, this isn't systematic theology.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Not at all.
This is Shock Therapy Live. Now, here's Steve-O.
Yep. Hey, are we recording?
Aw, yeah.
Steve-O, Pastor Nate Heitzig.
Shock Therapy Live.
That's right. We do this every single week.
Gets crazy up in here.
Pastor Nate Heitzig, the pastor of Renovate.
Yeah.
Which is every Thursday night at 7?
7:30. Dude, we're starting
a
new series.
Like
I'm so excited.
It's past my bedtime. 7:30 is late. Can we start it at 7 next week?
I'm just kidding. Dude, I'm excited. That'll be fun.
Yeah. So, teaching pastor of Renovate goes down Thursday nights at the Lobo Theater. Talk a little bit about. We don't get to highlight Renovate very much. So
yeah, it's really
that.
Cool, man. We see God do some incredible things. We're a young adult college ministry, age 18 to about 28-ish.
Okay.
We have a great time. We see about 300, 350 people pack up the Lobo Theater. We worship the Lord. We just finished a series called Second Chances as we looked at the second chances that God gives people throughout the Bible. And then we're starting up, in June, we're starting up a new series in the book of Matthew called Checkmate. And it's going to be a series through the entire book of Matthew, verse by verse. And I'm really excited about that. It's an incredible book. So we're doing that. And then actually next week, a couple weeks from now, we're having a live Q&A.
Yeah.
We're doing Shock Therapy Live at Renovate.
Live.
It's going to be fun. We're actually going to be – Steve-O and I are going to be there if you want to meet us, you want to come hang out.
Shock Therapy.
Ask questions.
Live.
Shock Therapy like live.
Live.
Like 3D.
Shock Therapy 3D. Live. Dude, Shock Therapy Live 3D.
Good, that's what we should call
we
it.
We should hand out glasses.
Oh my gosh, it looks like I could touch them.
Yeah. But don't.
Don't touch us, because that's weird. No, it's going to be fun. So on the 30th, May 30th, we're going to do Shock Therapy Live at the Lobo Theater, Thursday night, 7:30. Come down, get your questions answered. It's going to be an awesome, awesome time. We're really excited about it.
Yeah. Now, obviously, that's not going to be on the radio. That's live.
Live.
That's live. That's going to be at the Lobo Theater. So looking forward to that. That'll be very, very cool. So on that, Shock Therapy Live, your one-hour call-in show. We're focusing on you and questions you have. We've got some pretty interesting questions
strange
this morning already.
Questions.
If you would like to ask a question anonymously, you can totally do so. studio@mystaticradio.com to email us. And maybe you don't even want us to know your email address. Good news. mystaticradio.com/shocktherapylive. You can actually click a link there, and it'll send us a question that way.
I totally want a sausage burrito right now.
Really?
Yeah.
I have half a carne burrito right there if you want it.
No?
Okay.
I want a sausage.
I just cut it in half
burrito.
And like totally, okay.
No.
Speaking of sausage burritos, we got a question on through email.
Oh, no. Strange questions. Strange days indeed.
Yep. It is Shock Therapy Live. We say we're unshockable, and you want to take this question?
You want to take this one first?
Why not?
All right. In a Bible Christian, I think that's funny, in a Bible Christian marriage.
Biblical marriage.
In a biblical Christian marriage, are sex toys and fantasizing allowed?
Sweet.
Yeah. Awkward silence. That's a really interesting question.
Yeah.
And I think you'd get different answers depending on what Christian you would ask.
Yeah.
I have heard one of the things that I've heard pastors say is that the marriage bed is undefiled.
Ooh.
And so as long as when we're talking about fantasizing, as long as you're not fantasizing about someone else.
Yeah, see that word threw me for a loop.
Yeah.
Like fantasizing.
As long as you're not fantasizing about someone else, as long as you're not fantasizing about a different person in your bedroom, then one of the things that modern couples will do is they'll say they'll watch pornography. Will they?
Yeah.
Will they make love? And I don't think that's okay by any means.
No.
So I think as long as you're not inviting anyone else into the bedroom with you, the marriage
you
bed is undefiled.
Yeah.
In this situation, I think that there can be some truth and there can be some healthy whatever you want to call it, that can come from spicing up the marriage bed a little bit.
Right.
And so is it for everybody? No.
No.
But do I think that it's bad? Not necessarily, again, as long as you're not inviting anyone else or any other images or any other thoughts within the marriage bed.
I remember being at an Echoing Green show, and I'm hanging out, and this guy approaches me, and he was from Colorado. He was like, "Hey, man, I listened to Static Radio. You guys are awesome. Came down here from Colorado for this thing. Interested in supporting you guys. I love what you're doing. I got a business, blah, blah, blah." And we started talking. Cool, cool, cool. Turns out he had a Christian sex toy shop.
Huh.
I'm not joking. And so I was like, okay, let's talk about this. So we started to talk about it, and him and his wife, you know, they thought it was totally acceptable. It's between, yeah. And so we started discussing it, and as you said, it's not for everybody. This is a conversation you should have first.
Yes.
You can't just show up to bed and be like, what's up? Pull out the lightsaber and be like, yes. You can't do that. That's the kind of toys we're talking about, right? Like lightsabers and Pokemon, no?
Ah, yeah. This just got awkward. Yeah, it is a conversation you should have before because, you know, you might be the guy and you're like, man, yeah, yeah, we totally want to use sex toys. And you might pull something out and your wife might be terrified
flip
of that thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is a conversation you want to have with one another before you just want to, one of you just decides, yeah, we're going to do
yeah,
this.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Talk about it first.
Man.
Yeah, I know.
By the way, this is why we say this show is...
We talk about everything.
It's an adult show.
It really is. It really is. So here's the thing, though, and this is the one... I don't want to say downside, but this is the one gnarly thing. Like, I mentioned that guy in Colorado who had, like, a sex toy shop, like a Christian sex toy shop. But the hard thing I think about is at a shop like that... What else are you going to see? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you're going to go buy something like that. I can only imagine
now,
visuals.
Well, now there are certain things you can get at Walgreens now.
Oh, my gosh.
No, it's true. Walgreens does sell.
No, they do not.
No,
shut
they
your
literally
mouth
do.
Right now. Shut your mouth.
They literally
stop
do.
No, I'm going to CVS from now on. I can't do it.
I think CVS does, too.
Five
well, that was the thing. You know, it was weird. The other, probably a couple months ago, my wife and I, were with my mom and we were shopping at the mall.
Okay.
And we were
like,
at the mall.
Where is this store going?
No, we were at the mall
like
and we were just going to different stores. We went into Brookstone because we needed to get an iPad cover or something. And they had
okay
a whole display in Brookstone of adult sex toys.
No.
An entire display. Different sizes,
serious?
Different colors, everything.
All right.
So
well,
it's one of those things where, again, you don't have to go into CD stores anymore to get that, which you shouldn't.
Right.
But at the same time, it's still a conversation that needs to be had between the husband and the wife.
Yeah.
Don't try to do anything freaky, like, you know, pretend that I'm this person that you know, like I'm this celebrity. That's creepy. You know, no fantasizing like that.
Yeah.
No videos, nothing like that. You know, again, the marriage bed is undefiled, so don't defile the marriage bed. As long as you guys both have a clear conscience about whatever those toys are that you're using,
yeah,
then I think that's okay. But don't bring in anything else or anyone else into the bedroom.
And the word fantasizing is so general,
it's a strange
so
word
vague that it's hard
kinda
for
me
to like even comment on it because you could go so many different directions with it. So thanks for the call, or the email rather, and interesting. And
yeah,
as we said, it's Shock Therapy Live. Nothing is off limits. So if you have a question, ask it. We'll answer it to the best of our abilities biblically, what the Bible has to say about it. Yeah, and I'm moving right along.
Yeah.
That was good.
We've got a phone call question. Hopefully not as awkward as the email question.
Static.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey,
Shane.
Dude, so I totally wanted to be anonymous. For
oh
one. No, I'm just kidding, dude.
I'm like, oh, good.
Happy to blow that for you. No, no, dude, I do have a question, and it's nowhere near, like, the last question.
Oh, okay.
You know?
That's,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
or if you did, you now don't, because I totally blew your identity, so.
No, dude, I would, yeah, you know what, I would have just walked over there and said, dude, I need to talk to you.
True story.
So, here's what's going on. So, I got a business opportunity within my company, and potentially a move.
Oh.
The process, we're into the process of, you know, talking with upper management about this move and a transition, out of state. And so the thing is that my wife has always lived here and she's got a strong family support base that's always been around her. And so to my question, what as a husband do I need to be sensitive to toward my wife during this transition? I've been out on my own since I'm 20 years old, and never looked back kind of deal. So for me, I just want to be a good husband. We've obviously had the conversations up front, but I think it's like anything else. You have a conversation and the action are two different worlds.
Yeah.
And a lot of times what we come in contact with, you know, once we step out into the reality of a situation is different. And I want to be successful, and obviously nothing's more important than my marriage, but for the financial gain side of this, it's really, really an important move for the family. So, you guys, what do you got on this?
Don't move. I'm just kidding.
Right. Well, thanks.
I'm just kidding.
Very
just
insightful.
Kidding.
And you've been a huge help to me this morning.
I'm just kidding.
I know.
That sucks.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. Like, as a friend, I'm like, oh. However, I had a friend of ours recently. They packed up the car and drove to Iowa and decided, hey, we're going to take part in this ministry up here. And it was like bittersweet because I knew that God was calling our friends to something amazing up there and doing work in ministry. And it was just incredible. But as a friend, it's always sad to see somebody go.
Absolutely.
I appreciate that.
Thank you. I know your heart, bro, and I knew exactly where you're coming from.
So it's one of those situations where it's like, you know what, if you have prayed about this, I mean, you're still called to be the leader. You are the head of your house, and I love your heart, and I love that you're calling like, hey man, I want to be sensitive to my wife. If this is something that you feel God has called you to, you can't deny that. If this is also something that would be wonderful for your family, you can't deny that. I would
step in at maybe a little bit different stance and say, yes, you are called to do this, but that doesn't mean that you're not called also to love your wife and esteem your wife and consider your wife. And so what I would say in this situation, the best thing to do would be to maybe set up a time, you know, get the kids watched by a babysitter and just take your wife to coffee. Say, honey, I just want to go to coffee with you. I want to sit down and just talk for a couple hours. This is what's happening. This is what God's doing. Do you have any questions? I want you to voice any concerns, any fears. Let's just talk about this and really pray about this and make sure this really is the will of God. Because you want to make sure, you know, just as much as you're called to wherever God is calling you, you're also called first and foremost to be a husband to your wife. And one huge thing, because I would relate this in the same mentality that, well, you know, a lot of people say, well, if God's called you, then God's called you, and you just got to bring everyone along with you. Now, I agree with that to a point, but one thing we always tell people in ministry, if your wife's not called to ministry, you're not called to ministry. Hmm. So no matter how much you feel called and, oh, I'm going to go to ministry, I'm going to do this, I feel God calling me, if your wife is kicking and screaming, then you guys are unequally
– you will not be successful.
Yeah, you're unequally yoked in that. And then at that point, you're never going to be the effective person in ministry that you could be if your wife was called to it. So Bob Coy did a great, great message on this. So I would say in this situation, it's slightly different because you're going out for a job, not for ministry. But
here's
I would
the,
say there's
here's
still...
The, here's the thing on that, is that I got the call. I didn't seek this opportunity out. It sought me out. For one, I think that's huge.
Yeah.
You know, because I have been, you know, the Lord's blessed me here, and I've got great friends, obviously, and amazing, you know, he's just provided for us, and, you know, it's just been an amazing time here, 7 years. And I did have that conversation before I even picked up the phone to say, set up an interview over there for me.
Yeah.
I sat with her and said, what are your concerns? Where are we at? Her concern being the children, 5 and 3, the 5-year-old being in school, loving school. We're finally in that neighborhood that we wanted to be in. You know, things are good.
Yeah.
And then, you know, them not being able to be in the family. And so it's been a transition over a few weeks of having these conversations, as you suggested, on and off. Hey, babe, tell me what's on your mind. Where are we at? You know, and consistently it's been for the kids. And then I had to, you know, the point being, you know, if that's your reservation, you know, my father moved us because of opportunity.
Yeah, and you know, your kids are young enough that it wouldn't be that dramatic of a change. It's not like they're partway through high school. You know, they're at a place where they could still, I mean, if you moved at this point, they would remember wherever you're going as their home, not Albuquerque as their home.
True story.
That would be the truth. That makes me sad, dude.
Dude, I moved to Albuquerque when I was 8 or 9. I'm trying to remember, 8 or 9 years old, and whereas I still say, yeah, I was born in Texas, I have minor recollections of Texas, but Albuquerque's home. You know what I mean? Yeah. I was like 9 years old. So
yeah. At this point, I'd have another conversation with your wife, and I'd say, honey, yeah. Look, I really feel that this is God's will. This is God's plan for a life. I really want to do this. Let's talk about this point blank. Do you want to do this or not? Is this something that you want to do?
Okay.
Or if we go, are you going to be miserable? You know, the whole time we're there, if we go, is this something where you can go and maybe trust that as the head of the house, I believe this is God's plan for our life? You know,
right.
I'd ask her some very truthful questions on that.
Mm-hmm.
Cause it might be that she says, it might be that she says, look, you know, I'd rather be in Albuquerque than there, but I trust you as the head of the house and I'll go, because I trust you and I love you. And if that's the case, then you know that maybe she's not going to go. And she's not. This isn't exactly what she wants to do. But she's not going to. But she's not going to go there kicking and screaming and say, "You made us move. You made us move." You know, that's what you don't want. And so you want to gauge out once you get there how her attitude's going to be, and that's what you want to decide.
I love what. Again, I love. You know, you're right, and I love what you're saying because you keep coming back to the support side of it. Where you're never going to make it on your own. You got to have your wife's support.
Exactly.
If it's just you, you're going to fail. So I got the message, and
awesome.
And I just want to thank you guys for your time. I think you really helped me out. So thanks a lot.
Awesome.
Love you, Shane.
Love you, Shane.
I love you guys too, man.
Right.
You guys have a great day.
You too.
God bless, man.
Okay, I have a secondary question on that.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, phone lines are open, 505-338-3700, because you do make some great points. But here's a good question, because I know people who feel, quote unquote, called to the ministry. I'm gonna plant a church. And they have all these grand plans. But, and as you said, you know, and then you talk to their spouse and their spouse is kicking and screaming, and don't want to be a part of it. How much of that is saying, I want to be a good husband, and so walking away from that, and how much of that is stubborn wife? Do you know what I mean? Like, where's that line of, no, honey, if this is something God has called you to do, or quote unquote, you know what I mean? I know that that's a tough question, but I wanted to, for those that are listening who might be in a situation
this is the thing.
Like that.
I've seen enough pastors, I've seen enough people who have been in the ministry and have had a wife who's not called to the ministry that has ultimately been their downfall.
Okay.
Because the wife can't handle the pressure, the wife doesn't want to be in the spotlight, the wife doesn't, so all these things, and then that husband they end up getting a divorce, and it ends up hurting the flock and it's hurting the people because that wife wasn't called to ministry.
Okay.
You know, so
yeah.
The calling to be a pastor's wife is just as real as the calling is to be a pastor.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and so that's why, you know, when I first met Janae and we first decided to start dating, before we started dating, I said, Janae, I want to let you, she was in nursing school at the time. I said, I'm called to be a pastor. And if you feel called to be with me, you also need to have a calling to be a pastor's wife and all that entails. You're going to be in the spotlight. You're going to be serving in ministry. And I want you to really spend a couple weeks praying about that before we even talk about dating one another.
Yeah.
And so, she started praying. She started talking to the Lord. And again, she was in nursing school. And over about a 2-week basis, she started watching medical shows, and she had never been disturbed by blood or scared of hospitals. But when she would see a hospital or see blood, she'd get sick to her stomach and have to turn it off.
Oh, wow.
Over that 2-week period. She was in nursing school, and that's what she wanted to be around the hospitals and the doctors and the blood. And so over that period of time, she also started to feel a calling to be in ministry, and she had never had a calling in her life to be in ministry and to serve in ministry. And so God began to change her desire. Desires in that time, and it was really cool to see that. Now it was a decision that I had to make. Like, again, I feel called. That's why it's something you really want to, before you find your spouse, you want to decide, if I feel called to ministry. You know, so it doesn't mean that you can't be married and part way through your marriage say, man, I feel called to ministry, because God might change your wife's heart and she might feel the same way.
Yeah.
But it really is a conversation you guys both have to have. You guys need to realize that when you go into ministry, it doesn't just put a target on you, it puts a target on your wife.
Yeah.
You're putting a target on your wife. And so your wife has to be prepared for that and you know, understand all that entails and feel called to that just as much as you do.
And it's a very real, very scary thing, because I have a... I have some friends who the husband had that calling put on his heart, wasn't raised in church, didn't, you know, gave his life to Christ. And after about, you know, a year or so, you know, just ground in the word, felt this tug, this calling to be a pastor and to possibly start a church. And when he discuss that with his wife, it freaked her out so much so that, unfortunately, looking at the situation today, this was a few years ago, they're divorced. Mm. He walked away from God because it was like, God, you put this desire in my heart and it tore my family apart, and kind of ultimately, you know, blames God to some extent. I can't speak for him, but yeah, I mean, it's a real thing. This is what you got to think of.
When you're in ministry, you're getting attacked at all angles. You're getting attacked by everybody.
Yep.
And the last thing you need is your spouse to be attacking you as well. And so if you go into this ministry where your spouse is automatically adverse to it, she doesn't like it, and it's just going to make – I mean, you're going to crumble under ministry. Mm-hmm. Because when you go home, you need the home to be a place where your wife is uplifting you. She's building you up. She's ministering to you in kind. And if that's not the case, then pastoral ministry probably isn't where you need to be.
Right. 505-338-3700, the phone number. We got to take our first break. If you would like to ask a question, you can do so anonymously. studio@mystaticradio.com. You can also give us a call. Phone line is open and available for you right now. 338-3700. Right back with more Shock Therapy Live, Static Radio.
Static Radio's turning 2 years old.
And we're throwing a birthday party.
A shindig.
A fiesta.
We're going to have piñatas and a mariachi band.
If by mariachi you mean House of Heroes.
What if I told you we were so far away?
Friday, June 14th at the Lobo Theater.
With House of Heroes and special guest Come Win.
Get your invitation now at mystaticradio.com.
Tickets are only $15.
Or 2 for $30.
Or you can get that family 4-pack for $60.
Great math. It's Static Radio's second birthday party featuring Come Wind and House of Heroes.
Invitations and details at mystaticradio.com.
This is The Wire.
Hey, this is Nico and Caleb. We're the Static Interns, and we're here to tell you about an upcoming event.
Calling all knights and maidens. Grab your armor and prepare for fun at the Kingdom Chronicles Vacation Bible School at Desert Springs Church.
Is it my turn now? Parents, sign up your kiddos.
Sign up your kiddos for 5 days of fun at VBS, July the 15th through the 19th, from 6 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Okay, you are permitted to speak now.
Thanks. You can get them registered online at Desert Springs.
I'm still talking! Register online at DesertSpringsChurch.org. That's DesertSpringsChurch.org. You may speak now, Nico. Fine, be that way.
Do you have a free event going on? Submit your event details for The Wire at MyAestheticRadio.com.
Shock Therapy Live. Maybe this time the treatment will take. Better yet, chime in now on Facebook.com/MyStaticRadio or call 505-338-3700. We find it best to get it off your chest. Now, more Shock Therapy Live.
Welcome.
We are answering your questions today. We are answering all your crazy questions.
Steve-O, Pastor Nate Heitzig joining you. It is Shock Therapy Live, and as you can tell by the first question about sex toys.
Yeah.
We'll tackle anything. I mean, we won't tackle sex toys. Figuratively. Yeah. I mean, the question, not the... Moving on.
Hmm.
If you would like to get your question in, you can do so. studio@mystaticradio.com. You can also give us a call, 505-338-3700. We had a couple from, like, Sunday night and last week we had one...
Cool.
Yeah, we got a few.
We've got a question from Anonymous.
Okay.
He says, I've asked before.
Or she.
I've asked questions before. Honestly, my walk with God is going amazing, but I struggle with something. It's a deeper aspect of life. All my life, I felt like I don't belong here. It makes sense in the Bible, we're meant for heaven. Yet sometimes I feel I am so focused on the next, I don't even focus on this one. So here's my question. Is apathy a sin? Hmm. Apathy of what happens in this life, because in the next, who knows? It may matter so little. It's not depression. I evangelize. I go to transmit. I love spreading the word and being active in Christ. But when it really comes down to it, I always think, well, compared to heaven, who cares? Is this a sin? It is a sin in certain contexts.
Right.
When I look at David's life, I look at times when he was extremely apathetic. when I read the Psalms, I read the Psalms and I read times of him being extremely apathetic.
Yeah.
There's times in his life where that was a sin and there's times when it wasn't. I think apathy is something you take to God, and in that context, it's not a sin. If you're feeling apathetic, you do so at the feet of the foot of the cross. I look at Paul. Paul did this too. Look, to live is Christ, to die is gain. You know, if I just want to die, but also I know that I've got to live to spread the gospel. That's an apathetic moment. He was kind of like, I don't really care, but I know I'm supposed to care.
Yeah.
And David, the same way, when you read the Psalms, there's times when he's extremely apathetic, and the place to take that to is to the Lord. And so when you're feeling that way, it's something you take to God, and then it's something that in that time you pray that the Lord would cleanse you of that and enable you to be of most effect here on earth.
Yeah.
So it's something you take to God, but then it's something, it sounds like that's what you do. It sounds like it's something you take to the Lord, but then you go out and you evangelize. You go to transmit. You're spreading the love of Jesus Christ. So I don't think it's wrong to feel apathetic, but I think it's wrong to stay in a state of apathy.
Yeah.
If you stay in the state of apathy and it affects the way that you communicate with others, it affects the way that you build your brother and sisters up in Christ, it affects the way that you preach the gospel, then there's an issue. But if it's something that you just feel that way and you take it to the Lord and let God deal with it, then I don't see a problem with it.
Booyah. I agree implicitly. Everything you said, I have nothing more to add, because really that's it. If you were sitting at home on your couch like, vanity, all is vanity, meaningless, it doesn't matter, blah, this life sucks and who cares because I just want to get to heaven, then you might have an issue. But being that you're out, you're active, with your relationship with Christ, you've said, hey, it's not depression, I evangelize, I'm doing these things in Christ's name. I just have a hard time caring about this life.
You know, I'll be honest, there's times when I feel extremely apathetic.
Right.
I'm a very optimistic person, and it takes a lot for me to get depressed.
Yeah.
You know, I think I have very much. My wife and I just went and watched The Great Gatsby the other night, and
how
this
was
movie
it?
Taught it was good. I enjoyed it. It wasn't great,
right?
Gatsby. It was the good Gatsby. but at the end, he talks about this guy Gatsby, and he says this guy had this sense of no one that I've ever met, nor do I think I ever will meet again, of hope. That he saw hope in every situation.
Yeah.
And I feel like I very much have that ability to see hope in any situation. But at the same time, there's times when I get apathetic, when I get home and something's happened, I just say, man, you know what? I'm just ready to go to heaven. You know, I'm just like, and I feel that sense of apathy.
Yeah.
And it's something that I have to, you know, talk to my wife about, and I've got to pray to the Lord about, and it usually goes away pretty quickly. But I think that sense of apathy, in a sense can be a healthy thing, because it makes you focus on God, and it makes you focus on heaven and not on this earth as your dwelling place. So it can be a healthy thing, but it's not something you should dwell on.
Absolutely. All right. 505-338-3700 is the phone number. You're listening to Shock Therapy Live. Myself and Pastor Nate Heitzig joining you. And if you would like to get a question in, you can do so anonymously, studio@mystaticradio.com.
Yeah.
Or phone line open for you.
Or you can Facebook us.
Yeah, facebook.com/mystaticradio.
We forget about Facebook sometimes.
We really do. I apologize. Yeah. If you want to check that real quick and see if we have something on Facebook?
I don't think so.
Okay, fine. Yeah. We did get an email question that was quite long that I started to read and said, we'll read it on air anyway.
Yeah,
so.
I vote Steve-O that has to read this.
Okay.
I don't like reading that long.
I'll try not to shoot through it so quickly that we don't understand the premise of the question, but here we go. Okay. Steve-O and Pastor Nate, my question for you has kind of a long background. No kidding, it's 7 paragraphs. So I apologize in advance for the long scenario. Almost 5 years ago, my mom was killed in a car accident. The event has changed my life forever, and I'm a stronger Christian because of it. My parents were happily married for 19 years when she died. Shortly after the accident, my dad began dating a woman who my family hasn't always been fond of. She became very comfortable very quickly, which can be hard to take at times. My dad's a very quiet person, doesn't like to get in the middle of confrontation. My family's never said or done anything that's made her feel unwelcome. We know her intentions are good, and she makes my dad happy. We've welcomed her in as a member of our family. Despite our disapproval, we simply bite our tongue, suck it up when she says or does something we don't always agree with. I live up in Santa Fe, see my dad and his girlfriend several times a month. I'm the only girl and the youngest in my family, and unfortunately, I tend to wear my emotions on my face. I need some water. I recently got married and had a small destination wedding. I'd considered taking formal pictures with our photographer, but didn't want my main concern to be pictures. I simply wanted one or two family shots. I was asked by several of my relatives, aunts and uncles, if we could take a family picture without my dad's girlfriend. I said no problem. My future husband and I had briefly discussed and felt the same way. However, I never put much thought into it. She's my dad's girlfriend. Never thought how she, my dad's girlfriend, would handle the situation. Here, I admit fault 100%. I never gave her nor my dad a heads up that she would not be included in the several family pictures we took. I'll defend myself here and say I was getting married and had other things running through my mind at the time. My last concern was pictures or how she was going to feel. She became very upset and hurt when she wasn't included and left our reception early and refused to attend other weekend events we'd planned. It was brought to my attention after the wedding she was upset, and when we returned from our honeymoon, my dad asked me to try and mend the situation and apologize. I felt bad. My intention was not to hurt her. I had no idea she would feel as strongly as she did. However, it was not received well. She then proceeded to yell at me from the other end of the phone, telling me over and over how she couldn't understand how malicious and hateful I was and that we humiliated her in front of everyone at the wedding. I tried on multiple occasions to apologize, taking full responsibility for not handling the situation correctly. She proceeded to accuse me of being ungrateful and disrespectful and thought I planned the whole situation, that I knew ahead of time and did nothing. She told me she tried to end things with my father, but he refused.
Wow, all over a picture.
Yeah, his girlfriend sucks.
Somebody needs some Xanax.
I will admit, I too became heated with her, which probably didn't help the situation. The conversation ended by her telling me she didn't know how to continue to be at family gatherings together, and my actions needed to speak louder than my words if she was going to be able to move past this. Here's where I'm struggling. As a Christian, we're called to love our enemies, and I'm trying my hardest to let down my shield, but I feel my heart has hardened towards her. I want my dad to be happy, but I can't understand how someone who's 30 years my senior can be acting this way about pictures. Maybe I'm wrong here, but I feel like she too could have handled the situation better. I realize I'm only 25 and still have a lot to learn, but I'm writing. But am I wrong to think this was my wedding day? How dare her try to make it about her? I can tell my dad is hurt. I'm not sure what my next move needs to be here. I feel like my emotions are clouding my judgment on the situation. Any helpful words would be appreciated. At this point, I'm my own worst critic, and I feel like I've somehow done this horrible thing that's causing a wedge between my family. My husband has been a wonderful source of support, but I too feel like his judgment is clouded. Thank you for any advice on how to handle the situation.
Oh, wow. My goodness.
So that's a story.
Wow. That is that's a novel.
That is.
It was good, though. It was a good question.
It was a great question, and I'm glad you gave us the backstory.
Exactly.
I really
exactly.
am. We got all the information we needed.
Exactly. We really did. And we probably would, we might have answered it differently in the sense that, you need to apologize, you need to do this, if we hadn't heard the whole story.
Right.
This is my thought. She's an adult. She needs to grow up.
Yeah. She's
honestly.
55 years old.
So you've done everything you can. You've apologized to her, which honestly, I don't think you did anything wrong in the first place.
Yeah.
But you've apologized to her. You've gone to her. You've tried to repair things, and she has pushed it away. I think it's very normal to want the true family to be in the photos. When my wife and I were dating, and we went to her sister's wedding, they asked if they could have a family photo, and I automatically assumed, okay, cool, I'm not in that photo. I'm her boyfriend.
Right.
You know, now I know this is her dad, but it's still the same thing. They're not married. She's not part of the family yet. And I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting a family photo with the family members. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
So I don't see any issue with that. I don't see any need in that situation for you to have apologized in the first place. I think you did the right thing by apologizing, because it's always better to be humble and go and apologize then try to argue the situation. So I think you've done everything biblical, and I think at this point there's nothing left for you to do. I think at this point you wait around, and you don't try to remedy the situation, you don't try to make it worse. You wait for God to restore it if that's God's plan, but you've done everything you're called to do.
Yeah.
And I think she's the one who needs to grow up in the situation.
Yeah, I'm trying to wrap my mind around this 55-year-old girlfriend who is making it so much about her over a photo that maybe she's never heard of Photoshop. Maybe the dad could just take a picture of her in the living room. You guys could Photoshop it into one of the photos.
This is my mentality. Like the ruckus that she's causing, I would have been like, yeah, this is why we didn't want you in the photo.
I would go back and just continue to cling to this. And I say continue because it sounds like you absolutely are. In Romans chapter 12, starting in verse 9, it talks about the marks of a true Christian. It's all about love. Let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Contribute to the needs of the saints. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Repay no one evil for evil. If possible, So far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. And it sounds like, honestly, you've been trying to do that. As Nate said, you've done everything you can. You've apologized. Now, you did say, you know, you're bad. You did get angry. You did get heated. You're 25. It was your wedding day. You are not wrong in that. It was your wedding day. Your dad's girlfriend needs to get over a couple things and maybe think about it. But that's on her. That is not on you. Do not – verse 21, the final point in Romans 12, the very last verse in Romans chapter 12 says, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. So if you know that there is a way that you can bless this woman's life, it sounds like you've already tried. You've tried to make amends. I mean, maybe it's a simple question of asking her what she wants at this point. Maybe ask her. I mean, what can I do to mend this situation? I want my dad to be happy, as you've said. You want him to be happy. So ask her. Look, I you're my dad's girlfriend, and I want my dad to be happy right now. Is there anything I can do to mend this situation? And if she continues to curse and act like a 12-year-old, then at least you've tried. As much as it depends upon you, live at peace with one another. And it sounds like you've done a really good job trying to do that. So... Yeah. And congratulations.
Yes.
That's awesome. And maybe this is something, I love that God's using it for his glory and that it is binding you and your husband even stronger together right now in this time, that he's been that source of support for you. And that's fantastic. So.
Yeah. And you know, I think in this situation too, maybe it's good that this happened because maybe this would be a huge flag to your dad as
maybe
I shouldn't marry this crazy lady.
Maybe. That's good. I like that. Phone lines are open, 505-338-3700. You're listening to Shock Therapy Live. I'm Steve-O. With me, as always, Pastor Nate Heitzig. And going to the phone lines. Static.
Hey.
Hello.
So I guess through curiosity and whatnot, friends are like, hey, check this video out or interviews and whatnot. And I've seen some. I just blanked out. Like testimonies of pastors and prophets, I guess some of them call themselves, but like they were ex-Satanists or priests in that religion or whatever. And, you know, you watch a video and it links you to other stuff, and Illuminati and Freemasons and all kinds of conspiracy stuff. Aleister Crowley, Anton LaVey. So my question is, if out of curiosity or informational purposes, is it wrong or is it hurtful for a Christian to read the Satanic Bible to, like, better understand, I guess, how they think, to minister to them, et cetera, et cetera?
This question, I want to give you an answer, but this answer is very subjective.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it really determines where you're at in your Christian walk, how strong you are in your Christian walk, what you intend to do with the knowledge. You know, some people get so enamored with something new, like, oh, the Freemasons, and they're really reading it not as much to be ready to have an answer to someone who is a Freemason, but more because they're interested in what they believe.
Right.
And so it's not as much – the purpose of researching something like that is to prepare yourself to give an answer to somebody. So, for instance, I had somebody that I was ministering to for a while who was a Satanist. And so I actually got, I downloaded on a PDF the Satanic Bible onto my phone, and I read probably the first 50, 60 pages of it. Now, because I wanted to know what they believed so that I could give an answer to this person who believed it.
That's my intent.
Okay, so that's different. There's some people who would get the Satanic Bible and they'd say, man, oh, and it's more they're reading it like a novel because they're interested in it. It seems kind of scary and it seems, you know, it's almost like they're giving into the hype of it rather than for a purpose.
Yeah.
Then it's wrong. I believe that's not a place you want to be at. There's other people, too, who are very easily swayed. So if you're the kind of person who'd read it and you'd be like, oh, man, you know, that kind
of
makes sense.
I agree with
that.
Yeah. Right.
So that's why I say this answer is subjective, because it really depends where you're at on the spectrum. From a very surface answer, is it wrong to read it? No. Is it wrong to dwell on it? Yes. Is it wrong to, you know, memorize it or, you know, really look at it as a holy book? The way I would read it, this is the way I read it when I read the Satanic Bible. I read it as the rantings of a crazy person.
Right.
And that's about, that's how I esteemed it. I wanted to know what this crazy person said so I could tell other crazy people why this crazy person was wrong. But that's how I read it. I didn't read it as, oh man, you know, there's truth in this. I read it as the rantings of a crazy person.
Yeah.
And so that's about to the extent that I'd read a book like that is, okay, this guy's insane, but I'm going to read this book because I want to know how to help other people who are fooled by this guy.
Absolutely. And it's not just the Satanic Bible. I mean, yeah. For myself personally, there have been plenty of books. I remember when Harry Potter first came out, and that's what I was told. I actually picked it up because it was like, okay, wait. I want to be prepared to give an account to combat or to whatever, and it ended up – I actually ended up enjoying the book.
Different than that. We're not saying that you're going to read the Satanic Bible and say, oh, man, that's actually not as bad as people said it was.
It's actually a work of fiction. but then there are other books like Love Wins, Rob Bell's book. Yeah. It was such a craze that I picked it up. I actually got a copy from the publisher and read it in its entirety because I had friends who were like, yeah, Love Wins, there's no hell. And I wanted to know what was being said. I can think of plenty of examples. The Da Vinci Code, that was such a huge deal. Again, a work of fiction, but people were taking seriously. But yeah, absolutely. Hans, I would tell you, I've known you for years, and it seems like you have a good head on your shoulders about it. Still pray, use discernment.
Right.
You still want to be wise. You still, you know, take it seriously in a sense that, you know, that's still a work that is used.
And also, I can tell you from reading, just even in the first few pages of it, when I read it, it grieved my spirit when I read parts of the Satanic Bible because it is so anti-Christ. It is so against Christ, and it mocks the Savior. It mocks what he did on the cross for us that it grieves my spirit to read it. And I had to, I literally read a page and I had to put it down. I didn't read it for a few days. And then I opened it up and read a little bit more, but it's something as a believer, it's difficult to read. It's difficult to stomach what it says. And so go into it knowing that you really are reading something that is inspired by Satan, and that's scary. And so you've got to go into it prayed up. You've got to go into it ready to combat, and also ready expecting that Satan's going to attack you, and you're putting a target on yourself by reading something like that. So go into it prepared. Go into it ready for spiritual warfare.
Mm-hmm.
Go into it, I'd read like the book of Matthew and then read the Satanic Bible.
There you go.
You know, go into it ready to combat Satan.
There you go. Right on, man. Yeah. Thanks for the call.
Well, that was the thing, because I even asked like a friend and what they thought, and they're like, well, no, because it has like spirits or whatever, and you're going to be haunted or whatever, anything like that.
More of
a spiritual realm thing that I'd be like cursed or something like that. But I'm like, no, because it's kind of like a football players. They're going to watch the opponent's videos to see what they do and, you know,
study
so
film.
That you can,
nice.
You know, fight it or whatever. And I don't intend to fight anybody or argue or with them or anything, but just comprehend where they're coming from and try biblically, you know, apply what.
And there's wisdom there. I've never had a care or thought to pick up a Mormon Bible, and then a Mormon came to my door and knocked and wanted to talk to me about it, and I realized I was not prepared because I didn't understand what they believed and didn't understand the difference. And so going to it in wisdom like that and using discernment like that is very different than just saying, I want to go read the Quran right now because this looks interesting.
Yeah.
So now there
are other ways to do it, too, besides reading the book. For instance, you pick up a book like Kingdom of the Cults. And you can really quickly, in a lot quicker version, understand what they believe, why it's wrong, how it compares to the Bible, and actual arguments you can use to talk to that person. So something like that can be, at times, more effective than just reading their book, because in a book like Kingdom of the Cults, they'll quote verses from their canon. And that can be sometimes more effective than reading their actual book. Because, again, when you're reading their book, to really understand it and refute it and give answers to their questions, you're going to have to really study it, underline it, look for verses. You know, it's going to require you studying it like you would study the Bible to find what the errors in it are. Whereas if you go to someone who's already done that in a book like Kingdom of the Cults, it's a lot more effective at times than doing the study yourself.
A great resource for you is RZIM. .org. It's Ravi Zacharias International Ministries. He has so many people on staff from so many different backgrounds. He wrote a book collectively, collaborated with a lot of the people in his crew called Beyond Opinion, where it There's an overview of Buddhism, of Mormonism, of many different quote unquote religions, and it has great overviews, and it's usually from the perspective of somebody who was at one time, a Satanist or a Wiccan or whatever, and has great insight, biblical insight as to how to combat it, how to talk to him. And so I'm a big fan of Ravi Zacharias. So RZIM, they always have great resources for stuff like that as well. So
yeah,
hope that helps, man.
Thanks.
All right.
I guess another curiosity is, like, with those videos that link you to other things, do you believe or think, or I guess it's subjective to different persons, about Illuminati and all these corporations that are in it and related to Satanism and whatnot? Like, what do you guys feel or think about it? Because a lot of people just choose not to.
Yeah.
And other people are very open-eyed, like, oh, yeah, oh, my God, like, that's true. Or now it opens your eyes to, oh, okay, yeah, that is true. Or that's why they do this. Or
yeah, I choose
conspiracies and whatnot.
I choose not to follow the YouTube trail.
Yeah,
that's what I call it. It's the YouTube trail.
Because
it feeds into this hype. You start watching these videos, and at the end of it, you're like, man, did you guys know? And it really makes you into, like, this conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, and there's no fact behind it. I mean, think back to the 80s. Bono was a Satanist, and U2 was the devil's music. And you know what I mean?
And this is my mentality. What good does it do?
Right.
If you find yourself on a daily basis constantly coming into contact with Illuminati, and you're like, oh, man, I've really got to be ready to talk to these Illuminati folks that are coming to my door. You know, then that's a different scenario. But if you've never talked to Illuminati, then what's the point of you researching what the Illuminati believes?
Amen.
Because it really is just feeding into this hype of, oh, man, there's these people out there, and they believe this, and it's like, they're coming for us.
If you look at a map of Washington, D.C.,
that
shapes a pentagram, and that means that the Masons,
it creates this hype. So,
stupid.
Again, unless you see yourself having conversations with these people on a daily basis, there's no point to do it.
Yeah.
If you come into contact with one of these people and then you feel that you need to do research so you can talk to this specific person, that's a different story.
Yeah.
But if that's not happening, then I'd say, what's the point? Why are you doing it?
And if you're one of those people that looks into the conspiracy theories of the dollar bill and money and you don't want to have that, give it to us. We'll take it. We'll take that evil money off your hands.
I know.
Thanks for the call,
that
man.
Helps, man.
All right. 505-338-3700, the phone number. You're listening to Shock Therapy Live. Static, hello.
Hi. I have a question for you guys about serving.
Yeah.
I served in the children's ministry at my church for a couple of years, and I recently stepped down. I have three boys, and my two youngest are 2 and 1, and so it's just getting really overwhelming. But I guess I feel a little bit guilty about it. And I guess my question is, should I seek another place to serve, or should I don't know if I was wrong to step down from doing that. Or I guess I'm just confused about what it says in the Bible about serving and having such a young family and everything.
Right.
Yeah. Well, so why did you step down? Did you just do it because you were overwhelmed?
Well,
was there any sin or what reason?
Just overwhelming. And what was ending up happening is my kids were getting sick all the time. I guess from being in the children's ministry so much. And so I guess I just felt like it was a burden on them.
Okay.
And so I just at that point made the decision to step down.
Yeah, I think it's very biblical, and it's very good to find a place to serve, whatever means that is. That doesn't mean you have to serve in the children's ministry. That doesn't mean you can't serve in the children's ministry. I would say that you shouldn't serve, like, you know, let's say you go to a church that has three services. You shouldn't serve in every single service. What would be good is maybe find one service that say, hey, I'm going to serve during this service, and then the other service, I'm going to go to church. Something like that, where you're not overwhelming your time, but you're still giving room for time within your life for you to serve the Lord. Or maybe, again, finding another area to serve. Maybe there's another area within the church that you could help in. I've known women who have had kids, and their way of serving is they found a time during the week to come in and help clean the children's ministry.
Right.
And their kids would play around, and they'd help clean.
Yeah.
So there's different ways to serve. And so what I would do is whatever church you're going to, find what needs they have, what areas they have that you could serve in, and then just pick one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, one thing of note when it comes to serving in a church, also find what your spiritual giftedness is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times people feel this burden like, dude, I have to serve in ministry. My mom said I was a really good singer, so I'm gonna try out for the worship team. And it's like this awful, obviously God has not gifted you in that area, but it's like, you try it, and I'll tell you, all it's going to do is tear you down and destroy you. So make sure you find what your spiritual giftedness is, because God has equipped us all for different forms of ministry, different forms of serving. So maybe this is a moment for you, if you're feeling overwhelmed, to take a step back and go back and study that. Find out what your spiritual gifts are. Find out what God has called you to, where you feel like you can serve. Because, man, with a 2 and 1 year old,
that's 10-year-old too, so it's just a little bit much.
That's, you are a constant 24/7 servant. You know, we have a 6-month-old, and my wife is constantly, poor thing, man, just exhausted because she's got this little leech of life who just is constantly needing her attention.
Yeah.
And it's okay to take a break. You're not gonna like become unsaved because for a month or for however long you're not serving in children's ministry. You know, don't get burned out. That's the problem with servants in church. They go and they go and they go, and it's like, well, no one else is going to do it, so I have to do it. And then you're just destroying yourself. You're no good in that ministry.
Yeah.
No good.
Right. Now, let me.
I do have a question. I'm sorry, just real quick, about what you said about finding your spiritual gifts. Now, I pray about that a lot, and I'm constantly searching the scriptures for it, but I don't know that I've necessarily felt. I don't know what my spiritual gifts are, and I don't know how to figure that out, I guess.
Yeah, there's actually some really great, I know it sounds funny because it sounds like this would not work, but there's actually some great tests you can go online.
I was just about
spiritual, that are spiritual gift tests that you can take.
Yeah, there's a book series called The Three Colors, I'm trying to remember who wrote it. Three Colors of, different things. Three Colors of blah, 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 but they all have like spiritual gifting tests, and you know, just be honest with these tests, because I think sometimes it's like, I want to be on the worship team. Oh, music? Oh, I'm super gifted there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
And you know, it might be things that you don't even realize are a gift that you're just naturally good at. That's a gift. So if you're naturally an encouraging person, you have the gift of encouragement.
Yeah.
If you're naturally very organized, you might have the gift of help. So you might have the gift, you know, so there's things that you might be innately good at, and that's your spiritual gifting. So, you know, look at what you're naturally good at. If you're naturally a very organized person, or you're naturally a very creative person, or you're naturally very encouraging, or you have a gift of sharing truth with people and seeing change come in their life, you have the gift of evangelism. So, you know, just find what you're naturally good at, and then also take some of those tests online, and that can really help you find that.
NDC, or NCD, sorry, Natural Church Development. It's the Three Colors of Ministry. This one's by Christian Schwartz. There's different, you know, spirituality, discipleship, love, blah, 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 blah. But it's just one of those natural church development resources. NCD International. It's free. You get to check out, you know, what am I gifted in? Cause you know what?
Okay.
Too many people are going into church like, I got to serve. I'll go here. And then you get burnt out because maybe that's not what you're called to do, but you're like, yeah, but I'm serving, but you're not doing any good. In fact, you're probably just hurting or hindering someone else who maybe is called to that from stepping into that role. So.
Yeah. And you know, let me say this, because Steve and I both have wives who have kids, and they're stay at home moms.
Yeah.
They do a lot of work. So my wife serves in the children's ministry. She's got a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. And so what she does is her time of serving is on Tuesdays. And she will either have me at nighttime when she does it watch the kids. So I'll watch the kids for a couple hours so she can go, get fed and then serve. Or on Tuesday mornings when she goes to women's ministry, she will have the kids watched, by a babysitter or by, the church has, kind of a service, on Tuesday mornings to do that. And so that's the place that she serves. Now I know Steve-O's wife helps in the, worship ministry and other things at her church. How does your wife balance that, Steve-O?
My wife, she works full time as well. Like she's got a full time job, and she's also the executive director of the New Mexico Early Childhood Education Association. So she's like, she was in Santa Fe this week, and she had to talk to the lobbyists about this, and she had to do a meeting here, and she is constantly going, and so it's the same thing. You get burnt out. So we took these tests, and my wife's a musician, she's a singer, and absolutely worship ministry, and when right now with Brody, well, she can't be on the stage. She can't do that. But she also, she knows the worship very well. And it's very important to have somebody who's running words that knows that. Yeah. So right now, that's how she's serving on Sundays is for services. She's rocking all the words
lyrics.
And the videos and the technical aspects because she can't necessarily be on stage when she's got a baby attached to her.
Yeah.
And so, she's actually now behind the scenes running that, currently.
Awesome.
And so, so you just gotta, find it. You gotta seek God on this first and, maybe take one of those tests, find out where it is that you are called to and dig in.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you guys very much.
All right. Thanks for the call. Well, we're out of time.
Just got a big yawn.
Great show.
It was fun.
I apologize. We have like 7 emails. We will get to you next week. I promise. We'll keep them in our back pocket, and yes, we will definitely get to them. It's very important that you find where you are called to serve because you are going to get burnt out. I think people have this thing like, but it's for Jesus. I gotta do everything right now, and you're just going to tear yourself down. And then you probably, like most people, you get burnt out, and then you just don't want to be at church because you know that you're just going to have to do this or be here.
And the Bible talks about, as a wife especially, that your service is to your husband, your service is to your family. And so, you know, if that's what you do, understand that you are serving God.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to cut this guy off because to me, this is super duper important and we were out of time. But, make sure, you have that understanding and go for it. Let me say this. Serving in church should not be a burden.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? There are way too many people who are quote unquote servants who feel this burden. It's like, I got to do Royal Rangers. I got to do this. I got to do whatever because no one else is going to do it. And man,
they wake up in the morning. They're like, man, I wish I didn't have church.
Got to do this today. And it should never become a burden.
It should be a joy.
It absolutely should be. So if you're somewhere where you're struck down, you're burdened, you just wish you could find a way out. Maybe you need to talk to somebody about that.
Yeah, and probably not your. I don't know. I won't say this, but sometimes if you talk to your pastor, they're going to say, "Oh no, you're doing a good job."
You're great.
Because they don't want to lose you.
Right. So it's always good to be constantly training up others. For me, as a worship leader, constantly training up that next generation of musicians, of leaders, because you always want to be replaceable. You always want to be able to take a step back and to push others into that leadership role, shepherding others into these same roles.
Yeah.
And so make yourself replaceable, not irreplaceable, replaceable.
Totally.
Train up others in the area that you are called to. And that's how you continue to flourish and grow. Anyways.
Cool.
All right. We're out.
We love you guys.
Yeah. We'll see you guys again next week. And
peace
whatnot.
In the Middle East. Word to your mother.
Shock Therapy Live. Static Radio.